On Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis, we began yesterday the sugya of Amar Rava, which you'll see if you have the Tosfos Dibur Maaschal Aval on the right side, just for a frame of reference. You sort of count down approximately six lines below the beginning of Aval, and the first word in the line is Ischayev, and then we get to Amar Rava. Now, this statement of Rava has two parts to it. I call it a ration, a sefer. And we're going to try to analyze the relationship between Rava and the previous statement of Rav Papa. And what Rav Papa was mechadesh is that if a person borrows an animal, in this case he borrowed a cow, and he shechted it on Shabbos, he's potter. And the Gemara explains that Rav Papa's big chiddush, meaning there was a hava mina to say that in this case he would be chayev because of the halach of mishas mashicha. We saw that Rav Papa elsewhere in Masechta Baba Metzia has a concept of mishas mashicha with regard to mizonos. So there's certain chiyuvim that a shoel incurs from the moment that he takes the parah. For example, he has to pay out of pocket to feed the animal. We might extend that to include even onsim, that whatever happens in the down the line and the animal is destroyed such that the shoel cannot replace the animal, cannot return the animal, he became chayav already from the time of the Mashicha. That was the Hava Mina. In which case, here we're talking about a case that the paro was she'ulalo on Erev Shabbos, and then he shechts it on Shabbos. So the destruction of the animal took place on Shabbos through his Maisa Tficha. However, he was already chayav, according to this Salkadaitach, from the time of Mashicha, which was on Erev Shabbos. So the chayav was sort of set, although it's obviously conditional, and it works like this. The Mashicha generates a chayav. The shoel returns the animal and he exempts himself from the chiyuv. If, in event, he cannot return the animal, then he was chayav already from the Shas Mashicha. If that be the case, then there's no application of Kim Leib the Rabbine here, because the chiyuv goes back retroactively to Erev Shabbos. Kamash Malon, the chiddush of Rav Papa, is that although it's true that the Mashicha does generate a Chiyuv Mizonos, but it doesn't generate a Chiyuv Onsim. The Chiyuv Onsim begins and is generated at the time of the actual onus when the animal is lost, is destroyed. And that took place on Shabbos through his Maisa Tvicha. So that simultaneous with his Chil Shabbos for Melech HaShechita, he incurred a Chiyuv Tashlume Mamon. Hence, he's Potter Midin Kim Leib D'Rami.
Now, his chiddush is really only about him, because he's the one who's saying that Mishak Mishicha who did Chayav Leib B'Mizonotea, right?
Right, right.
That's not a universal.
The Gemara wants. Yeah, that's pretty much universally accepted. The Gemara just wants to make this even more profound by telling you that this is Rav Papa himself. He was the one who opened their eyes about the chiyuv that's generated Mishas Mashicha. And now we're distinguishing between the chiyuv Mizonos that's generated Mishas Mashicha as opposed to the chiyuv for Onsim, which is generated at the time of the Maisa Onus.
Okay, thank you.
And all this is very important as an introduction to Rava. And now let's go through the Reisha and the Seifa of Rava. Rava wants to know what happens if the Parashu'ula in the hands of the Bailim was now inherited by his Yarshim. Now, within the period of time of the She'ela, the Yarshim have rights to use the animal. Do they also incur responsibilities, meaning a Chiyuv Onsim? On the one hand, look, if you're enjoying the benefit of this animal, then you should also at the same time be responsible for the animal. On the other hand, the Yarshim have a right to say, look, there are two parts to She'ela. One part is Zechuyot. These are positive financial benefits, meaning that you can use the animal. On the other hand, there's a separate, what we call Kabbalah Sachrayus or Hischayvus, to pay for Onsim. Now, what's transferred over to the Yarshim through inheritance? They inherit the Zechuyot, because any monetary claims or rights that the father had in his lifetime now automatically transfer over to the children with his death. But as far as Kabbalah Achrayus is concerned, they never took Achrayus. And that's going to be the Reisha of Rava. The Seifa of Rava is what happens if the Yorshim enjoy the benefits of this para by shechting it and eating its meat. They had no idea, they had no clue that this para was in fact a borrowed para. They thought it was the father's para. It doesn't have to be returned to anybody. There's no other owner. And they shechted it. So here we have a concept called Dmei Basar Bizol, which means that they have to pay for the meat in so far as they enjoyed the benefit of the meat. That's called Hanah, the benefits they got. And they don't have to pay the full price of the meat because there's a very strong mitigating circumstance here. They had no clue and there was no way that they should have known that this para actually belonged to a third party. But now we get to the what we called yesterday the postscript, the PS here at the end of Rava. And that's going to be the sugya that we want to start today. Rava says the following, and I hope you remember this from yesterday. Hiniach lehem aviyam achrayis nechosim l'shalim, chayobim l'shalim. The whole picture changes. If the father owned karka, he owned real estate, and the yorshim, the heirs, inherited real estate.
Wait a minute. Did he have to explicitly set up that real estate as a collateral?
No. Whenever you have a chiyuv mamon, the real estate is all automatically a backup, a security for that chov. So that when the father in his lifetime received the para b'she'ela, and he was mischayev to return that para under all circumstances. If he can't return the actual animal, it got lost, it died, whatever happened, he has to pay for it. Then the backup, if you want to call it the security or collateral to that chov, which allows the mashiel, the owner of the animal, to have absolute confidence that he'll be able to collect this chov, is the karka. Now, we're going to have now, as you remember from yesterday, a kind of classic structure in the Gemara. When Rava gives you a resha and a sefer, and then he adds a postscript, sort of a proviso, and he says the law changes if, does that go back to the resha or to the sefer? Ika masni lea resha, according to one school of thought, we're going back to the case of the resha, and the animal, if you recall, died, which is called an onus, and the question is whether the heirs are liable to pay for the onus here, the death of the animal, which was engendered by she'ela, but the as we said before, the heirs did not accept upon themselves any chiyuv. There was no personal obligation to pay for onsim. Here, Rava says if the father had karka, then already at the time of the she'ela, the shibud is chal in the karka. And we're going to see exactly how that relates to Rav Papa that I mentioned earlier. But be that as it may, hold out for that for a minute on that. There is now what we call a lien on the karka. The karka is now a betichus, it's now a security collateral to pay up any chov that's incurred by the father. Well, the father accepted upon himself a chov to pay for this para in event that it dies for onus. And that chiv now generates a shibud, a lien on his karka, assuming he has karka. Now the Yorshim have no right to say, well look, we never accepted upon ourselves this chiyuv. Why should we pay out of pocket to the mashiel, the owner of the cow, for the loss of the cow, which was ba'onis? We never accepted that responsibility. There was never a shibu, there was never a chizchayvus. We never would mechayv ourselves for that. But the answer is that in this case the mashiel can completely circumvent the Yorshim. He doesn't have to go to the Yorshim. He goes straight to the karka. He collects from the karka. The karka was already meshuba during the lifetime of the Baalim to pay for this chov. because from the moment that the father received the parah, he already has a chiyuv to pay in the event that the animal is lost, and if he can't pay out of pocket, then his karka, his meshubad, will be the collateral for collection, so we can completely cut out the arshin here. Ika masli le'asefa, others interpret that the postscript of Rava is relating to the Seifa.
No one says both?
No, I'll tell you why. Because if you insist that it's going on the Seifa, it's because you have a halachic objection to applying it in the Reisha. Meaning, you're going to claim, like Rav Papa, and again we'll get back to Rav Papa in just a minute, that the Shibud is not Chal. Even though the father took the cow as a she'ela, he never accepted upon himself an achrayus which was binding. He accepted upon himself a future achrayus which would only be binding at the moment of the death of the animal. So again, if you give me a few minutes, we'll try to clarify this. So let's go through Ika demasne le asefa. There are those who interpret it in the case of the animal, the sefer with the animal was shechted by the yarshim. And the sefer of Rav establishes that the yarshim in this case don't have to pay the full amount, the market price of the cow, but they pay what's called dmei basar bezol. They pay the cheaper price, which is about two-thirds, the slashed price. Comes along the Seifa, this postscript in terms of the Seifa, and it illuminates the Seifa and restricts the Seifa, and it says the following, that's all true, and the Yarshim can get away with paying for bus or bizol if the father did not have karka which he owned in his lifetime. However, if the father had karka which he owned in his lifetime, in such a case the Yarshim have to pay the full price, the full market price of the para. Why? Because in such a case, they would have had to clarify before they shechted the animal who owns the animal. Now we're going to have to analyze this. What difference does it make? All the achronim and even the rishonim ask this question: what difference does it make whether the father has karka or not have karka? You want to know whether there was negligence and we could blame the yarshim for not investigating and not clarifying who actually owns this parah. Well, what difference does it make whether the father owns karka or doesn't own karka? Either you want to say that every yoresh has an obligation that hovers over his head to clarify before he shechts an animal that indeed that animal belongs to his father and it wasn't just in the herd, in the pen, but it really belonged to someone else. Or you're going to say, no, there's no reason for the yarshim to entertain that possibility that this cow is different from all the other cows in the corral and it belongs to someone else. But why does it depend, why does it hinge, if you hold Ika Demasli Asefa, on whether the owner of the animal, I'm sorry, whether the father who was Morish the animal, whether or not he had karka? What difference is that? So what I want to quote to you here is the following. This is a sort of like an accepted consensus amongst many, many different Rishonim. They say the following, Hatamu, where is the Pshia here? And the answer is the Pshia is not that of the Yarshim, but rather it's that of the father. Why? Avim Pashabakach, his negligence was Shalom Omar Lahem, he didn't tell them and notify them that the parah is she'ula, belongs to someone else. And therefore, from the moment of the Pshia, which took place during his lifetime, Nischayev bi onseha v'nishtabdu nechasim. In other words, there are three critical moments of time as far as she'ula was concerned. Then there's the Meshicha, when he actually takes the parah. There's the onus, which is when the parah dies. And in the middle, between time T1 and T3, there's T2, which is called the moment of Pshia. Now, let me explain. There are three possibilities as to when the Shibud and the Chiyuv is Chal. At what point does the Shoel have to pay for the animal? The first approach would be to say Mishas, Meshicha, from the very moment that he received the cow, he already, signed the document, I will pay you, in event. The second approach would be no. Until the animal dies, as long as the animal's alive and it's replaceable, returnable, then there's no shivu, there's no chiyu. The middle shita says no. You know what? There's a compromise midway between the two polar extremes. There's a moment of time which generates a chiyuv even before the animal is died. Not as early as the Mashiach, but once there's a pshia. Now, the question is, okay, the father had a chiyuv during his lifetime, but that chiyuv doesn't transfer over to the heirs. Why should they be chayv to pay for the father's pshia? And the answer is because the father owns karka. Since the father is the proud owner of real estate, then the pshia itself generates a shibud on his karka, which is collectible even after his death. So that although the Yorshim have a very good argument, they say, well, we had no clue that this animal belonged to someone else. We shechted it thinking, in all honesty, in all innocence, that it belongs to our father. We can't be chayv for pshia. But the answer is the father's chayv for pshia. Okay, my father's chayv for pshia. He should have notified me. Fine. But that doesn't mean that I am responsible. Why am I liable for the pshia of my father? And the answer is because the pshia of your father already generates a chiyuv. So now let's go through the Gemara inside. Everything I told you is sort of outside. According to one school of thought, that Rava's postscript goes on the Reisha. And we're talking about the case where the animal died and whether or not the Yorshim have to pay for the loss of the animal for the onus. Is Kolshkein HaSeifah? How much more so in the Seifah? In other words, this school of thought has an unbelievable chiddush, which is very, very radical. And it undermines the shita that we've been discussing of Rav Papa. If you remember, Rav Papa's shita is that the time of the chiyuv is only with the loss of the animal. Well, in our ratio, what we're establishing is that there was a chiyuv already from the moment of Mashicha. As soon as the father received the para, he became Meshubad. Again, this is all conditional on the fact that he owns what?
Land.
Karka, correct. Then the shibud is already inherent in the karka. And as we said before, you can cut out the yorshim, but this is an unbelievable chiddush, very revolutionary. And it tells you that already from the get-go, the moment that the parah was transferred from the mashil to the hands of the shoel, there was a shibud, there was a chiyuv. Again, it's a conditional shibud, which means that if the parah is lost, then you can collect from my karka from the moment of the chiyuv. Well, when was the moment of the chiyuv? If you hold mandamaste rations from the moment of what? Of the Mashicha, way back when. The Seifa is less of a chiddush, because then at least we're not going back to the time of the Mashicha, we're not necessarily arguing against Rav Papa. It could be that Rav Papa himself would accept that from the moment of Pshia, that's when the chiyuv is locked in, and therefore that's when we generate a shibud. But if you're going to take it on to the Reisha, then you're going to have to go back to the moment of Pshia, who pleaded the Rav Papa, and then you're arguing against Rav Papa. Rav Papa said that all the chiyuv of a shoel emerge with the moment of the onus, when the animal is lost. Hence he applies the principle of Kim Lev Rabbine, when the shoel shefted the animal on Shabbos. But now we have another school of thought that says, I'm not going to go as far as the Reisha is concerned. In the Reisha, to say that there's a chiyuv and a shibud that's chal in the father's lifetime from the moment that he took the para, i.e. from Mashicha, that I don't belong to that camp. I belong to the camp of Rav Papa. And Rav Papa says that the chiyuv is not engendered by the Mashicha. Avala Reisha lo. So the second school of thought that's called Man de Masile Asefa, they have a deliberate reason why they cannot accept Masile Aresha, because they represent, reflect the sheet of whom? Rav Papa. And according to Rav Papa, does the Mashicha generate the Chiyuv? Nay, that's not so. What they could accept is a concept of Pshia, that maybe Pshia would generate the Chiyuv. So Bosai, what we've done until now is really a tag on to yesterday's sugya, and now we begin the new sugya.
I think Tosa says that you could learn from Shia is that he didn't tell his Yorshim.
Right.
And then it could go back to the Mashiach.
Because again, the father should be aware of the fact that he's got a par that looks like every other par, but it's not his. And he knows that his children are going to be in charge of using his property and enjoying the benefits.
So, 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 so,
he should have notified them that this paro over here is not his.
Taisa seems to be saying that Bashir, that's his Bashir, that he didn't tell him until the son, so that can go all the way back into the ratio.
We read it in the name of the Ritva, but yeah. So now we have a new sugya, which is not a new sugya, but it's a new branch of the old sugya. Let's go back for a moment to the question of the Gemara that we've been dealing with for a long time now, for basically three blot, and it goes back to Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. There was a stira between our Mishnah, specifically the Sefer of our Mishnah, which is called the Noshim HaPsulos vis-a-vis Knas, and the Mishnah in Masechta Makos. Whereas our Mishnah says that there is a collection of knas, for example, Ba'al Achoso, even though he incurs a chiv kares, he still has to pay knas. And yet the Mishnah in Masechta Makos, in the very exact case of Ba'al Achoso, says that he gets malchus and he doesn't pay knas. So here's where we had a crossroads where we look to the right and we look to the left. One approach was that of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan pins it all on Hasra'ah. And he says the following. In our Mishnah, we're talking about a case of Ba'al Achoso without a Hasra'ah. If there was no Hasra'ah, there's no Malchus. Hence, you pay, and he will pay the Knas, because there's no Malchus. And that was Rabbi Yochanan's Shita, that whenever there's an overlap between Malchus and Mammon, you get Malchus and you don't get Mammon. Hence, in the Mishnah of Makos, there was a Hasra'ah and you get Malchus, you don't pay the Knas. In our Mishnah, we're talking about a case where he doesn't get Malchus for a technical reason, there was no Hasra'ah, and therefore the Mishnah goes on to tell us that he pays Knas. That was Rabbi Yochanan. Then we had Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish on Daf Lamed Gimel and Beis had a totally different approach. And he says that our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says that you get both. When there's an overlap of Malchus and Mammon, you get the Malchus and you pay the Mammon. And then according to the approach of Reish Lakish, we take the two Mishnayos, and like two halves of a locket, you know, of a heart, we combine them together, and one is mashlim the other. And basically, the Mishnah in Ksubis is addressing the question of Knas. The Mishnah in Makos is addressing the issue of Malchus. And they're both correct, because they both reflect the Shita of Rabbi Meir, and there's going to be both Malchus, as the Mishnah says in Makos, and Mammon, meaning Knas, as the Mishnah here says in Ksubis. Now the Gemara wants to analyze why is it that Rabbi Yochanan refused Reish Lakish and vice versa. The Gemara says, Bishleim Rabbi Yochanan, lo amrik Reish Lakish. I have a very technical, mechanical reason why Rabbi Yochanan did not take the path of Reish Lakish. And that is the Kamukim Le Kirabbanan. In a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbanan, we would rather interpret Mishnayos, and now we're talking about Stam Mishnayos, our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, the Mishnah of Makos likewise, according to the Rabbanan. Reish Lakish is putting us in a real bind, and he's saying that the two Mishnayos are authored by Rabbi Meir, and we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. You know, we have we have two ways of understanding what happens in Malchus and Mammon. Do you give Malchus and that's Rabbi Yochanan, or do you give Mammon and that's Ula, if you remember Ula Shita? But be that as it may, whether you accept Ula or you accept Rabbi Yochanan, the fundamental principle is Kim Levi the Rabbi, right? Kidei Rishasa, Mishum Rishachas, not Mishum Shtei Rishasa. So either you get Malchus and you part from Mammon, or the other way around. Rabbi Meir has a very unique Shita. And that is, and we saw that in the Mishnah in Makos on Daf Daled, that the Mishnah says that if he testified against Reuven that he owes Shimon 200 zuz, then the Edom turn out to be Zonimim, then Lokin and Mishalman will give Malchus for Losana, and at the same time will make him pay because of Kasha Zoma. So that's the unique Shita of Rabbi Meir. But to Zetzarai, to assume that the two Mishnayos reflect the Shita of Rabbi Meir, that rubs Rabbi Yochanan the wrong way.
Now, when we talk about Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, we're going back to the brayta of Ganav Tavach B'Shabbat, Ganav Tavach L'Avodat Kochavim V'Chulei on
No, not really. That has to do with whether Kimlei Ben Ramine applies in the case of Misa and Mammon. I'm talking about Malchus and Mammon.
Okay, so, I'm sorry.
So the two different Rabbi Meirs against the same Rabbi Meir, but two different shitos of Rabbi Meir. One shita of Rabbi Meir, the one that we're focused on now, is that in the case of Loka Mishalim, it's Loka Mishalim. You get both Malchus and Mammon. Then we have another discussion. What would Rabbi Meir say about Misa and Mammon? And that's where he differentiates between Mammon and Knas. And he says that although Misa knocks off Mammon, that's a Chiv Mammon, it doesn't knock off a Chiv Knas. That's going to be the case of Ganav V'Tavach, you know, with regard to Dal Vey. That's a separate issue. Again, it all relates to the same Rabbi Meir and the same Kimlei V'Rabbinei, but not the Kimlei V'Rabbinei of Kedei Rishos of Malchus and Mammon. That's sugya about Ganav V'Tavach B'Shabbos. That relates to the Kimlei V'Rabbinei of Miso Mammon, of Ason.
Okay.
And the question is whether Ason applies even to a Knas of Chidish Achid Shetorah V'Knas. Fine. So again, we're halfway there. We understand very well why Rabbi Yochanan was inhibited about Reish Lakish's approach. El Reish Lakish, my time alo omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan seems like a pretty simple approach. And the question is, would there be Malchus or would there not be Malchus? And it all depends on Hasra. So you can have one scenario in which there was a Hasra, and that's the Mishnah in Malchus, so hence he gets Malchus and there's no Mama. And that's going to the Chachamim, not Rabbi Meir. The Mishnah in Ksubis, on the other hand, is a case where there was no Asra, hence there's no Malchus, and you pay the Knas. So the Gemara answers, Amar Lecha, this is what Reish Lakish is going to respond to Rabbi Yochanan. And this, my friends, is a radical breakthrough in the whole sugya of Kimlei B'Derabbanei. This will send, you know, shockwaves through the whole sugya of Kimlei B'Derabbanei. Says Reish Lakish, Kevan de Ilu Hisrube, had they given a Hasraha, Patur, he would be Patur from Knas because he would get Malchus and we would apply Kimlev the Rabbinay, is therefore a Kilo Asrube Nami Patur. Even if there was no Hasraha, i.e., in our Mishnah, the way Rabbi Yochanan interpreted, Reish Lakish insists nevertheless he would not pay Knas. And we would still apply the principle of Kimlev the Ramanei. Because Kimlev the Ramanei doesn't relate to Befal. Befal means would Bezdin be implementing both Malchus and Mammon. That's not the issue of Kimlev the Ramanei. Kimlev the Ramanei goes back to the Avera itself. Would the Avera, in abstract terms, in theoretical terms, generate Malchus? That's called, in the Lashon HaShas, as we'll see it, a Tzad Malchus. Tzad Malchus means the Aver per se is of the nature, because of its severity, that it would generate Malchus if the conditions were met. You would need Hasra, maybe other conditions that have to be met. So Reish Lakish says the principle of Kedei Rishoso is not addressing Bezdin and saying, Bezdin, we're going to tie your arms around your back and we're going to say you can't implement two punishments. That's not what it's all about. What it's about is that the Avera per se knocks off the Chiyuv Mammon because it's an Avera Sheyesh Bo Malchus. And once the Avera has Malchus, that's called Tzad Malchus, even if we won't be meeting out the Malchus before because there was no Asra, nevertheless it would still knock off the Chiyuv Mammon. So therefore Reish Lakish could not possibly entertain Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation, namely that our Mishnah is talking about a case where for technical reasons he doesn't get Malchus, there was no Asra. We're not interested in technical reasons. We're not interested in implementing the Malchus befall, as we said in actuality. We're interested in the Avera per se. If the Avera per se lends itself to Malchus, that's enough to knock off the Chiyuv Mammon and apply the principle of Kedei Rishoso. Here, Rabosai, we have a fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about the nature of Kedei Rishoso, about Malchus and Mammon. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says it addresses Bezdin and inhibits them. You cannot apply and implement two punishments at the same time for the same Maisan Vera. That's Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore in the case where there's no Asra, then he will be Chayav Knas in our Mishnah. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, says no. The principle of Kedei Rishoso is addressing not the Bezdin, but rather the Aver itself. If the Aver is an Aver Sheyesh Bo Malchus, then you apply the principle of Kimlei B'Derabbanei. I'll give you an example. Let me just give you an example of what I think Reish Lakish has in mind. And by the way, I'm not really comparing these two, but just to, I call it l'saber ta'ozen. We have, for example, a principle called lav she'ein bo ma'isa. Like, for example, let's say that Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh, did we discuss Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh here, or is that a different?
Not here.
Oh, okay. I forget what I taught, but I taught this recently, right?
In the 8th.
Right. So Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh would be one of many, many cases of what's called a lav she'ein bo ma'isa. Why? Because if I own chametz, then if I didn't get rid of it, I violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh for owning the chametz. There's no ma'isa involved over here. Now, what would be if he violated Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh al yidei ma'isa? Would he get malchus? For example, let's say he purchased chametz on Pesach, or he took a dough, poured water on Pesach, and he was mechametz es ha'isa. This is gigantic machlokas. And I think it's very similar to this machlokas between Reish Lakish and Yochanan. Reish Lakish will look at the aveira per se. Although you implemented the aveira, in other words, in order to violate the aveira, you did a maisa, but the aveira per se is ownership, is Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh. That's called the lav she'ein bo maisa, and therefore will never generate malchus. The other shita in the Rishonim will hold like Rabbi Yochanan that it all depends on the befall. Did you violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh passively or actively, with a ma'isa, without a ma'isa? If you did it with a ma'isa, then it becomes a lav she'ein bo ma'isa, and therefore you get malchus. Reish Lakish would say no. We don't look at the befall. We look at the lav. The lav, by definition, is a lav she'ein bo ma'isa. So it's very cute, you know, the way Reish Lakish says it. Kevon de ilu asrebe, you know, had they given him asra, he would get malchus. You know, it reminds me of the famous joke about a young bacher who goes out on his first date. So he asks the shadchan, you know, it's the first time in my life, I'm very nervous about this. What should I talk to her about? So the shadchan says the three F's: food, family, and philosophy. Again, philosophy is with a P. So he writes this down, he gets to the date, and he sees family. So he says to her, do you have a brother? She says, no. She's up to food. Do you like spaghetti? No. If you had a brother, would he like spaghetti? That's philosophy. If he would have had Asra, would he be Chai Malchus? And if he'd be part of Ramon. So Reish Lakish wants to know what would be if he had Asra. You know, if you had a brother, would he eat spaghetti? Okay. The Azdu Litamayu, this machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish is not a new machlokas, but rather it's an old machlokas. Tchiasa Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omar, and he raised the issue. Now, Rabosai, here we're making a slight shift, not a total shift. We're close to that target, but not on the target. We're no longer talking about Kedei Rishaso, which means Malchus and Mammon. We're going to shift to Misa and Mammon, correct? And that's called Chayve Misa Shogigin. Now, what happened over here? The man, you remember, sent out an arrow on Shabbos and he ripped someone's garment. But guess what? He didn't know it was Shabbos. He was a shogeg. He was unaware of the fact that it was Shabbos. Well, perhaps he was amazed with that asra. Again, we can discuss that as a separate topic. Now, the question is, does he pay damages? So again, one approach is going to say that it all depends on actuality, what we call befall. And in actuality, he will not be chayav misa because he's a shogeg. So if Beis Din now, his hands are free to make him pay for the damages. The other approach is going to say, well, we look conceptually and theoretically, and we say, it doesn't depend upon the fall, it depends upon the avera. This avera, had it been implemented, b'mezid, or with asra, it would generate a chayav misa. Now we have another case. Chayve Malki is Shogigin. What happens if a person violates an Avera, but there was no Asra? Had there been Asra, he'd be Chayv Malki. So he's a Shogig. And at the same time, he incurred a Chiyuv Mamon.
Wait, is Rav Dimi asking what about these two cases?
No. What we're saying now is that this machlokas that we're approaching here and formulating in Masechet Ksuvos was already documented by Rav Dimi in the case of Chayve Misa Shogigit. So that he's about to tell you about the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about Chayve Misa Shogigin. If we apply that to Chayve Malki Shogigin, then we have a repeat of what we just learned here in Ksuvos. You know, it's almost like the Gemara is giving us chronological information, meaning in history, in chronology, this machlokas was already formulated by Rav Dimi way back when. We're applying it here in the rejection of Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan's reconciliation of the two Mishnayos, the Mishnah here in Ksuvos, the Mishnah Makkos. And we're going to say that Reish Lakish rejected that reconciliation because in his view, even without the absence of Hasra, you would still not pay Mamon. And that's just a repeat of what we saw in Rav Dimi. But keep in mind, Rabbi, so Rav Dimi is giving us a piece of information that's brand new. For us, it's brand new. Because he's telling us that the Machlokas from Yochanan Reish Lakish applies even in Chayve Misa Shogigin. Because again, in Chayv Misa Shogeg, maybe you say, well, he's Chayv Misa. Well, yeah, is he Chayv Misa? There's no Asra, he's a Shogeg. I wouldn't say he's Chayv Misa. No, he's Chayv Misa. And that's going to be Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is going to say, let's look at the Avera and define the Avera. If we categorize it as an Avera Sheish but Misa, then there's no Chayv Mama. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Chayv Reish Lakish Amar Pot. Oh, wait a second, I skipped a few words. V'chayve malki yoshogigin v'dover ache. Dover ache means moment. So what happens if he implemented a violation of a chiyuv malkis, but there's no malkis because there was no asra? For example, ba alacho, somebody who's no asra, but v'dover ache, does he have to pay for the knas of chamishim kesef? Is Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev? In both of these cases, whether it's Chayev Misa Shogin or Chayev Malki Shogin, you're Chayev. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, if there's no Asra, then there's no Misa or Malkis Befoal, and the entire deal of Kimlei Ramine is addressing whom? Bezdin. Reish Lakish Amar Patur. In both of these cases, you're Patur. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Halo Asrube. And therefore, Bezdin is not going to punish him for Misa or for Malkus. Reish Lakish Amar Patur came unto Ilu Asrube. If he had a brother, would eat spaghetti. If they would have given an Asra, he would be Patur. Is therefore, Kilo Asrube Nami Patur. Now, Rabosai, what I would like to mention here is that there's a whole school of Rishonim, and especially Achronim, that see in Rav Dimi a radical chiddush that goes a little bit too far, so to speak. What do I mean? It's very possible, so claim the Achronim, that we can differentiate between two categories, two cases. One is Chayvi Misa Shogigin, and the other is Chayvi Malki Shogigin. Rav Dimi is unwilling to see any difference, any distinction between the two. He lumps them all together. And there's one issue that will determine both Chayvi Misa Shogigin, whether you Chayv Mamon, and Chayvi Malki Shogigin, whether you Chayv Mamon. And the issue is, are we addressing Bezdin or defining the Avera? There is a way of distinguishing between the two. And that would be the following, that Kidei Rishaso, and here's where Rabbi Yochanan has perhaps the upper hand, and intuitively maybe we would agree with Rabbi Yochanan's approach, Kidei Rishaso really addresses Bezdin. I mean, the Pasuk itself is talking about Bezdin and telling Bezdin to meet out Darboim Yakenu to give Malkus. So therefore, Kidei Rishaso Mishum Risha Achas Velo Mishum Shtei Rishayos. We're addressing Bezdin, and we're saying, Bezdin, you can't punish him for two Rishayos. Hence, Rabbi Yochanan says that if there was no Asra, then Bezdin's going to punish him by making him pay the Mamon. Somehow, Reish Lakish is going to say, no, that Kidei Rishaso is not addressing Bezdin. Very, very difficult. That's a point, a glitch that has to be ironed out. In the case of Chayvei Mises Shogigin, here we have a little bit more of an intuitive identification with Reish Lakish's point of view, because we're talking about the Chumras Avera here. And what happens is that this Avera is so severe that it overshadows a Chiyuv Mamon. You may remember the sugi that we learned yesterday, and we differentiated between Chil Shabbos and Bava Machteris. And in both Srichusas, we were trying to define which is more Chomer, Chiyuv Shabbos because it's Iser Olam as opposed to Machteris, which is only an Iser Shah, or Machteris is more Chomer because Machteroso, Zui Hasroso, where Shabbos requires Hasra. So there's Allah in the Chumas Avera. What kind of Avera is it? Is it an Avera's Olam? Is it a temporary Avera? And so forth and so on. And that's going to determine whether it knocks off the Chiyuv Mamon. That's how Rashi interpreted the Sugi that we learned yesterday. Here, Reish Lakish might be right. It all depends upon the chiyuv in theory. What kind of avera was involved here? The avera is so severe that it would generate misa, it overshadows and neutralizes the chiyuv mom. But in any event, again, the main point that I want you to be sensitive to is that Rav Dimig lumps this all together, and he doesn't know of any distinction between Chayvei Mises Shogigin and Chayvei Malchus Shogigin. Now, at this point in the sugya, we go back to the pasuk itself, which is the source for Kimle B'Dirabine in the case of a Chiyuv Mamon, and we're going to try to analyze the text of the Torah according to both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So let me just read the psukim out loud. We've seen them many, many times. This is in Parashas Mishpatim. V'chi natsu anashim v'nagfu isha hara v'yatsu yiladeha v'lo yeh asan. So the pasuk is talking about a case where there was a brawl between two men, and one of them killed, or it all depends on whether he did kill or he didn't, but anyway, he gave a makah to this woman. As a result, she lost her vlad. And the Torah tells us, since there was no ason, v'lo yason, therefore no shianesh, he, the makir, will have to pay tashlume vlados, what's called the value of the vlados. If, on the other hand, there would have been an ason and Nebuchadnezzar died, then the makir is not liable to pay damages, to pay tamei vlados. Now, the Gemara is now going to embark upon two possible ways in which lo yason could apply. It could be interpreted. One interpretation of lo yason refers to the isha, to the woman herself. And the Torah is telling me, if lo yason, meaning she gets out of bed, and Baruch Hashem, she stands on 2 feet, then the makeh has to pay tamei vlados. But the Gemara now is going to investigate another possible interpretation of the words lo ya'ason. The ason is not a reference to the isha, but it's a reference to the makeh, right? To the one who, we'll call him Reuven, who hit, he wanted to hit Shimon, and instead he hit Leah. And it goes like this. Im lo ya'ason la'nogev, which means the following. The catastrophe here in the life of the nogev is the makeh, would be if he's chayav misa. If he's chayav misa, that means his life is going to come to an end. And that means that im lo yason, meaning if he's not chayav misa, then anoshi anesh kasher yashisalov, he has to pay tamei vlados. So again, let's just try to review the two perushim, the two interpretations, and then what is the difference between the two? The first interpretation says v'lo yason anoni shi'anesh means that she didn't die. The second interpretation says that he will not die, which means that he will not be chayav misa. In the first interpretation, if she doesn't die, he pays dmei vlados. In the second interpretation, if he's not chayav misa, then he pays dmei vlados. The difference between these two interpretations is going to be the case where there was no hasra. Keep in mind that the nogev, the makeh here, had in mind to kill Shimon. Reuven had in mind to kill Shimon. So if we assume he got a hasra, then he would be chayav misa. Again, that depends on another sugi that we touched on. You remember his kavin laharug esem laharug esaf. But let's assume he would be chayav. Now, what happens, on the other hand, if the makeh kills the isha without a hasra? According to the first pshat, there's no difference. Why? Because whether or not they gave a hasra to the nogev is irrelevant. The Torah says that it all depends upon ason le'isha. We're going to the first interpretation, that the word ason relates to the isha. Whether or not the nogev got a hasra is totally irrelevant. He will pay if she survives, he will die. I'm sorry, he will be potter if she dies. Correct? That's according to the first pshat. If we go with the second pshat, that the pasuk is talking about ason to the nogev, then why does the Torah say he pays to make vlados? Because lo yason means that he's not chayev misa. That means that even if the woman dies, then if he's not, since he's not chayev misa, right? So let me just get the mathematics here. In other words, why is he? Why does he pay the Dmei Vlados? Because he's not Chayav Misa. But if he would be Chayav Misa, then he wouldn't pay damages. So this is going to really depend upon Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Let's go through it inside. Esvei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. V'lo yason anoshi anesh. And here we turn, as I'm happy to do, to Daf Lav and Hayim and Aleph. My love, ason mamash. Let's take the pasuk literally, and the pasuk seems to relate to the isha in lo yason. After she got hit and she survives it, then anoshi anesh. So why does the nogev have to pay the bala isha to make vlados? It's because she survived it. If she survived it, lo yason anoshi anesh. So the chiyuv dmei vlados is in a case of lo yason, meaning she didn't die. Had she died, then the nogev would be potter. Does the Torah say that there was asra or there was no asra? Apparently the Torah doesn't make any conditions here. And it means that even if there was no asra, since she died, he doesn't pay. That proves Reish Lakish's perspective of chayvin nisushoni. Lo. And here, Reish Lakish, I'm sorry, here Rabbi Yochanan reinterprets the pasuk. The pasuk is not referring to a son of the isha, but it's referring to the ason of the nogev. Will he be chayv misa? Will he not be chayv misa? And that all depends upon whether he had asra or he didn't have asra. The Torah is not referring here to the ason la isha, but rather the chiv tashlumin is dependent upon the ason la nogev, which means the chiv misa, and that's called in the language of Rabbi Yochanan din ason. In other words, does he have a din of a son of tragedy, meaning of catastrophe, and he'll be put to death? And if the answer is im lo yason, if he's not going to be put to death, i.e. there was no asra, then he pays tashlumin. Hence, chayve misa shogigin, a chayve in tashlumin, and we don't apply the principle of kim leib derami. So do we have it, Rabbos? I'll just get, just myself, if you don't mind, I'm just going to make a kind of a summary of what's going on here on the top of Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. The rule of thumb here, which is Reish Lakish's rule, is stoma. Stoma means anything that's not qualified means it always applies. If there's no qualification. The Torah is saying that will the nogev pay damages or not? The answer is Just tell me the answer to one question only. Did she die or did she not die? Im yason anoshi. Lo yason. If she survives it, then anoshi yonish. But if yason, if she'll die, then he doesn't pay damages. Regardless of whether he's going to be put to death. The Torah never makes that qualification. And if it's unqualified, that's just what it is. It applies straight across the board. So it means, even though he himself is not going to suffer any ason because there was no asra, nevertheless, since she survived, I'm sorry. Since she died, right? He doesn't pay damages. So again, he's not suffering any ason. There was no asura, but yet he's parted from damages. Why? Because she died. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, reinterprets the pasuk. The pasuk is not referring to ason, what we call ason mamish, meaning that she died, but rather din ason. What does it mean, din ason, halachic ason? That's referring to whom? To the Nogef, exactly. Will the Nogef have a din ason? If the Nogef has a din ason, then lo ye onish. But if there's no din ason, im lo ye ason, anosh ye onish. So it means that if there's no chiv misa, then anosh ye onish, and Reish Lakish says that he will have to pay damages. Why? Because he's not chayv misa, hence chayv misa shogigin chayv. Ika diamri. There are those who claim that it wasn't Reish Lakish who asked this kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, but just the opposite. In this second version, Esvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, it was Rabbi Yochanan who objected to Reish Lakish, and he quoted the pasuk V'lo Yason Anosh Yanesh, My love din ason, lo ason mamash. Now, the Ika diamri is a bit strange because it's taking the word ason out of context, out of simple pshat, and adding the word din ason. You know, the word ason is not qualified. It sounds like ason means, you know, death or not death. Did she die? Did she not die? And everything, and the issue of pain, the main blood, it hinges upon whether she died or she didn't die. No, Rabbi Yochanan is so convinced that the word ason is a reference to din ason that he raises a question of objection to Reish Lakish. Omar Rava Umi Kaman the Omar. Is there really such a possibility that somebody would maintain the Chayvim Misa Shogigin Chayavim, that Rabbi Yochanan would be of the opinion that in a case of Shogig he pays damages for Tani Devei Chayizkiya? And this is an introduction to tomorrow's sugya, Mr. Shem, the famous sugya of Tani Devei Chizkiya. Now, Chizkiya has a very complicated hekesh. And this is called Make Adam and Make Behema. Make Adam is a Ritzicha case, a murder case. Make Behema is Nezika, where you pay damages. And in one single pasuk, in Parshas Emor, at the very end of Parshas Emor, the Torah combines in the same breath Make Adam u'Make Behema. And that's going to give Tanavei Chizkiya a hekesh. Now, this is one of the most complicated hekeshes you'll ever come across. Because a hekesh usually means A equals A. And we apply the dinim from A to B. That's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is we're going to apply the opposite. What do I mean? This is the principle called lo chilakta. What does it mean, lo chilakta? If let's say we have case A, which is Maka Behema, we have case B, which is Maka Adam. If in case A it's Lochi Lakta, then the Hekesh is going to teach me that in case B it's Lochi Lakta. But it works in opposite directions. In the case of Maka Behema, Lochi Lakta means you're not going to distinguish between Mazen and Shogeg Lechumra, meaning the Torah is going to say that even in the case of Shogeg, you're going to have to pay. Why? Because that's called Adamu Elyon. So again, I killed your animal, and I didn't know it was your animal, or blah, blah, blah. I have to pay for that. That's called Lochi Lakta. The Torah doesn't differentiate in Makah Behema between what? Between Mezid and Shogig, and Yechayim for Shogig. Now, through the Hekesh, we're going to say that in Makah Adam, Lochi Lakta, and you're always going to be Potter. There in Makah Behema, you're always going to be Chayav, and in Adam, you're always going to be Potter, whether it's Mezid or Shogig. So I understand that you'll be potter in the case of Mezid because that's called Kibbutz Ben Ramin. But even in the case of Shogeg, you're going to be potter because of the principle of Chayvi Misa Shogeg. So that's going to be the Shita of Tanan Beit Chizkiya. And Rav is so convinced that we accept Tanan Beit Chizkiya that he doesn't even entertain the possibility that anyone could argue with Tanan Beit Chizkiya. And it's going to take Rav, when he comes from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, to try to interpret right, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, in a way that we shouldn't be upset by Tanav Beit Chizkiya. Okay then? So let's just, if I can show you, just make a little note of it. So we'll start in Imrit Shem tomorrow from Omar Rav.
Do you remember where this is, in the Torah, the Makeh Beimah?
Yeah, that's at the end of Parshas Emor. Vayikra Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Beis, 24-21.